What we're going to have the shiur on this evening is the important discussion in Halacha and Shulchan Aruch about eating before davening and learning before davening. And this is something that the Gemara discusses very expressively, very openly. If we look in the Gemara Maseches Brachos, Daf Yud Amud Beis, the Gemara says, commenting on a pasuk. Pasuk says, Lo Sochlu Al Hadam. The problem with this pasuk is that the Rambam and the Ramban and many other Mefarshim are not even sure what exactly the simple understanding of the pasuk really is. Normally, when you have a drasha in Chazal, so the pasuk means X. On top of that, we also add an additional drasha in Chazal. But we know what the simple pshuta shel mikra is. Here, we're not even clear, what does it mean when the Torah says, Lo sochlu al hadam? If I'm not mistaken, the Ramban writes on Chumash that it's referring to the following, either the Rambam or the Ramban. I don't remember, I didn't check it up today, but they're not exactly clear what it means. One of the Rishonim says what the simple interpretation of the pasuk is, that in the days of the Gemara, in the days of Chazal, they used to have a custom in many religions that they would all sit around and they would put blood in the middle and they would sacrifice the blood to whoever their god, whoever their religion was. And all the Ummas HaOlam, they would all sit around it and they would eat while the sacrifice was burning, while the incense was burning and it was burning up the blood. And there the Torah says, Lo sochlu al adam, you're not allowed to imitate that which the non-Jews are doing in their service of Avodah Zarah, and you're not allowed to eat while sitting around the fire while the blood is being sacrificed, while it's being offered to the other religion. And that clearly is not relevant today. We don't even know anybody who does such a thing. But again, what the point I'm bringing out is that the Rishonim are not even clear. How do we define what the parameters of this pasuk are without getting to any drasha? What exactly did the Torah mean when it said, Lo sochlu al hadam? And this is one of the psukim that we refer to as a lav shebechlalos. There are so many different isurim that come directly from this pasuk in Chumash. And here is another one, where the Gemara says in Maseches Brachos, Lo sochlu kodem shetispalalu al dimchem. Perhaps what this means is, you're not allowed to eat before you take care of your dam. Lo sochlu al hadam. Don't eat before your dam, which means the understanding is that when a person davens, they are now worthy of life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you another opportunity to live life because you asked for it. And therefore, the Gemara assumes you're not allowed to eat before begging for your own blood. That is the interpretation of this pasuk. And from here we learn, Kala ocha v'shosev achar kach mispalel. If somebody indulges in eating, the Gemara says, and they're eating and drinking, and only afterward do they think about davening as an afterthought, Alav HaKasuv Omer, the Torah says about such a person, V'osi hishlachta acharei gavecha. And you have taken me and thrown me after gavecha. What does it mean? Al tikre gavecha ela geecha. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, la'achar shenizgar zeh. After I am so pompous, after I am all pampered because I took care of my own needs, then, oh, I remembered about the Ribbono Shel Olam. I remember that I should also daven. Kivla lava malchus shamayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that is in some way an expression of gaiva. It's showing you think so highly of yourself that you take care of yourself before you take care of your business with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore the Gemara says that this is something that is very much frowned upon. And the Beis Yosef discusses whether or not this is actually an Isur D'Oraisa. Is that really what the Torah means after all? Some Rishonim say the whole institution of davening is only a Din D'Rabbanan. It's not clear that it's even a mitzvah M'D'Oraisa to daven. So if you don't even have a mitzvah to daven, then what does it mean that there's an Isur to eat before davening? So that's something that obviously you have to discuss. But it seems clear in the Beis Yosef that this is something that is only an Asmachta. It's something that is just based on this Pasuk. But it's something that is taken very, very seriously. I remember a number of years ago, I saw a beautiful story in the Sipuri Hasidim. That is a sefer that is written by Reb Zevin. Reb Zevin collected a lot of beautiful stories of Hasidish Rebbe's, different Hasidish stories, and he basically curated it based on the Parshios HaTorah. It has some relevance to the Parsha. So in Parshios Kedoshim, he writes the following story where he says, there was once a Chassid who lost his Rebbe. His Rebbe passed away, and now he was lost. The Rebbe didn't have a child, so there was nobody to take over, and he didn't know who was he going to follow now. He needs somebody to follow in his life, and he wasn't sure what to do. So he turns to a friend of his and he says, you have any ideas? You know, I'm lost. We lost our leader. I don't know who's going to take over. Till they figure it out, it's going to be a while, but I need someone that I can look up to for guidance. His friend said, you know, the truth is, there's a Torchina Rav. I don't know who that is, but he says, this was some great personality in Europe, and he says he's very young, but really, you should put your attention to him because he is a very great person. And he's laughing it off. He says, what am I going to follow this young man? This is not somebody who really I can look up to after the Rebbe that I came from. This is no replacement at all. He says, I'm telling you, go once to watch this personality daven, and you'll be sold. After you watch him daven, you'll know he's a very special tzaddik. He's a special person that you should follow. He says, okay. He comes in the morning, he shows up in the Beis Medrash, and he watches as he davens Shacharis, and he's just watching, he's mesmerized, he can't believe it, that somebody can actually have so much kavana, somebody can stay focused for so many hours, and the whole tzibur already left the shul, and he's still davening, and he's still going with his talis and tefillin. Finally, it's already 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and finally he finishes saying the last words of Shir Shal Yom, the last words of Aleinu, and this young chassid turns to the Rebbe, and he says, you know, I was very impressed by your tefillah, but I have to ask you a question. You know, the Torah also says, "V'nishmarta mi'od nafsho sechem." You're supposed to take care of yourself. And this doesn't look to me like you take care of yourself. After all, when are you going to eat? You have to eat breakfast, you have to eat lunch. You came here at 7 o'clock in the morning, or Vasikin time, whatever it was, and you've been here for the last couple of hours. What's going to be? You're not taking care of yourself. And the Rebbe turned back to him and he says, I understand that I do take very good care of myself, but let me tell you my perspective. I show up to davening in the morning and I think about the following. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of me and my tefillah, then what do I need to eat for? If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to take care of me and my tefillah, then how can I eat? It's not that I'm making a conscious decision not to eat, but eating is not even on the radar. Before I daven, what am I going to eat? I don't know whether or not HaKadosh Baruch Hu is actually going to give me life. What am I going to have the presence of mind to eat now? You look at somebody who just lost a relative, and I think about it all the time. Whenever, I mean, Mike Krengel knows far better than any of us in the room, but I think about it a lot. When we go to someone's home after they unfortunately go through a tragic loss, one of the things that we point out to them as outsiders who are not really experiencing the avelus is, don't forget, you need to eat, you need to drink, you need to sleep, you need to take care of yourself. Sometimes when a person is going through something, they don't think about that. What, you think I'm thinking about eating, I'm thinking about drinking, I'm thinking about sleeping? It's the last thing on my mind right now. All I'm thinking about right now is the terrible tragedy in front of me. And the last thing I'm worrying about is myself, because my attention is focused on someone else. And that's something that he writes over here. When we come to a tefillah, and you think about eating before a tefillah, he says, how can you even consider such a thing? After all, eating before a tefillah, when you're about to think about so much larger issues that are on your mind, you're going to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a parnasa, you're going to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a refuah, you're going to ask the Ribbono Shel Olam Chanan Adas, you're going to ask him for a shidduch, you're going to ask him for all the different things that we ask in Shmona Esrei. You're going to go and eat a meal before you go and daven. It's just unfathomable. And the chassid said that when he heard that kind of response, he was sold on this Rebbe. But it's a beautiful story, and I think it really highlights for us the significance of this idea that the Beis Yosef says is very, very serious. The Beis Yosef takes it very seriously when he says this idea that the Gemara tells us about not eating before davening is something that we do need to be very careful about. Leaving that aside, the Eretz Tzvi, the Kasher Glover, has a very fascinating tshuva where he, anybody read the Mishpacha magazine? Anybody ever read it? If you don't, it's okay. If you do, it's also okay. But they had a very interesting article this past week about Reb David Mandelbaum. Reb David Mandelbaum is a tremendous Talmud Chacham in Bnei Brak. We happen to have a very close connection. He is a phenomenal Talmud Chacham. Anyone ever saw the Svarim Pardes Yosef on Chumash? Absolutely encyclopedic Svarim, absolutely amazing, that were written before the days of computers. He wrote it before there was a database where you can find all this stuff. And he actually kept the notes at home. Actually, when he printed the Svarim many, many years ago, he showed it to Reb Chaim Kanievsky. He lives in Bnei Brak. At the time, Reb Chaim Kanievsky wasn't as busy as he was in the later years. And he showed him the work. He showed him the manuscript. And Reb Chaim was blown away. And he said to him, don't ever throw out your notes, because nobody is going to believe that you actually worked on this with your own two hands. He's an absolute genius. So how did I come to know him? When I was in the Mir Yeshiva, he's a Gera Chassid. When I was in the Mir Yeshiva, I got a call a number of times in Yeshiva on my cell phone from this Reb David Mandelbaum. I never knew who he was. And he said, you know, I remember I once read your father wrote an article in the Beis Yitzchak, like, you know, 20, 30 years ago, where he wrote about this topic. I want to write something. I just want to quote it. I don't remember. Was it the Beis Yitzchak, the 13th volume or the 14th volume? As if I have no idea. So I'm wondering, how does this man know everything? And it's phenomenal. It's astounding. He literally, he reads something, he knows it, he remembers it. He once came to give a shiur right before Pesach. He was in America and I asked him to come give a shiur. He's just a phenomenal Talmud Chacham. So he has a great interest not only in learning and in printing beautiful Svarim. For anybody who goes through Shas, for anybody who learns Daf Yomi, or who just, whatever, travels through Shas at a quicker pace. So he actually wrote a set of Svarim that is so amazing. It's called Daf Ala Daf. Anyone ever saw those? Daf Ala Daf is a absolutely phenomenal set of Svarim. The reason why he wrote it is because in the Gera Chassidus, they're very into learning Bikiyas. And I think they have a tremendous amount of Bikiyas and many, many Masechtas and Shas, and they go through Masechtas quickly. I think that was the institution of the Gera Rebbe, the current Gera Rebbe. I don't remember whose idea it was, but anyway, that was what they did. But after a couple of times going through Shas, he said, it's getting boring. You know, how many times can I go through the Masechtas? So the Gera Rebbe encouraged him, why don't you make it interesting for everybody? So he wrote a set of Svarim that are referred to as daf ala daf, where he literally goes on every single daf in Shas, and he points out the most famous marmakamas, the famous discussions in the Achronim, interesting historical issues that you should know about, fights in Europe and different svarim that you never heard of, that he brings down that have to do with the sugya that you're learning. It totally illuminates every single daf in Shas and gives you absolutely incredible marmakama. So he's amazing. Why did I get here? So he was actually interviewed this week by Yehuda Geber. Anyone knows who Yehuda Geber? Jewish history soundbites? Anyone ever heard of him? He was my roommate in the Mir Yeshiva. And what? No, he grew up in Muncie. And then his parents made Aliyah when he was in high school, I think. He's actually coming here in the summer. We're doing a tour of the Kibrit Tzadikim with him. He's going to tell us the history behind it. Very interesting tour coming up. So Yehuda Geber, he's very into history, so he interviewed Reb David Mandelbaum this past week, and the article was published in the Mishpacha all about his affinity toward the European Gedolim, the Polish Gedolim. Reb David Mandelbaum has an affinity where he wants to print all the tshuvas of the old Gedolim that nobody ever heard of. How many people have heard of the Eretz Tzvi? Not so many. How many people have ever read the Kozhik Lover Svarim? Nobody, probably. My father has, but nobody else. So Yehuda Geber thought it was interesting. Why are you so interested in all these personalities? And he wrote that the reason why is because he said his father was a survivor, and he was a Gerech Chassid, and he said he was an only child, and his father basically was talking to him about all these great Gedolim, Rabbi Nachum Zemba, and all these great Gedolim who he knew in Europe, and nobody now ever heard of them. And he felt the need to preserve all the great legacy of the personalities that his father basically raised him on. So he said when he was already in high school, in the Ger Yeshiva in Bnei Brak, when he was in high school, he used to interview all of his father's friends who were survivors, and he wrote down all their accounts on index cards, and that's why he wrote a biography on Rameir Shapiro. He just wrote a biography on the Kozhik Lover. He writes a lot of historical biographies. He's just an amazing person. Anyway, be it as it may, the Eretz Tzvi writes in his tshuva a very interesting discussion, and that is, what happens if a person feels that they're too weak to be able to go to shul and sit through the entire davening and be able to actually pay attention with the Chazaras Hashatz and with the laning and with everything, unless they eat before? So is it better that they daven at home b'yichidus without eating? Or is it better that they wait to daven in shul together with the minyan and have the extended davening, but that is going to mean they're going to have to eat before the davening? And this is something that he discusses back and forth in the tshuva, and he writes in the end that it's better for a person to daven b'yichidus at home than it is for him to eat before davening and then come to shul and participate with the minyan. It seems that that is something that the Bir Halacha writes in the Mishnah Berurah as well in Siman Pei Tes. And that is what he writes. Then he reconsiders. He has an additional paragraph there where he says, well, I'm not so sure. Maybe it's not a good idea. Why? Because after all, he says, how much kavanah does a person really have when they daven bizman hazeh anyway? Most people, they daven, whatever, they take care of the davening, they're not having so much kavanah. Okay, so he's going to daven at home, he's not going to have kavanah. He's going to go to shul, he's also not going to have kavanah. He says, it's better that at least he'll go to shul when you're together with the tzibur. If I daven without kavanah, at least the tzibur's tefillah will carry my tefillah up. So if nowadays we're talking about a situation where people don't have that much kavanah, so he says, it's better to go to shul, and you have the schus hatzibur, and that will help you. But again, I think it's a very interesting issue here to discuss whether or not you have a right to eat before the davening, when the reason you're doing so is because you want to try to have more kavanah. So that is something we're going to get to in a second, when we see exactly what the Shulchan Aruch, what the Beis Yosef is going to write about that issue. So let's see. Let's begin with drinking before davening. Drinking before davening is a very important issue because, as we know, many, many people like to drink a coffee before davening. So let us see what the Achronim say about this. And this is something that we have to look back at the original Gemara, and that Gemara is the Gemara Maseches Brachos. So the Gemara told us two things you're not allowed to do. Number one, you're not allowed to eat. Number two, you're not allowed to drink. And the Gemara seems to say that the reason why is because of gaiva. So based on that, the Torah writes that when we talk about gaiva, when we talk about a person pampering themselves and taking care of themselves before they take care of business with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that really doesn't apply if I'm drinking water. A person takes a drink of water, you're really clearing your mouth, you're really just clearing your head, you're not at all taking care of your own needs before you take care of your business with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore the Achronim say that b'mayim lo shayach gaiva, that's the Lashon HaTur, quoting the Ravya, that when you drink water, that is not considered to be a problem at all, and that would not be an issue of v'osi hishlachta acharei gavecha. The Rambam writes in Ilchos Tefillah. Listen to the Rambam. It's not on here, but the Rambam says, Hatzamei v'ha'ra'av. If you have somebody who is thirsty, or somebody who is hungry, im einam yecholim lechavin daitam b'tefillah, if they're not going to be able to have kavana while they daven because they're going to be worrying about how hungry they are, they're going to be thirsty, then, writes the Rambam, they're allowed to eat before the davening. Once again, the Shulchan Aruch quotes that in Siman Pei Tes from the Rambam, and the Pribegadim explains the reason why is because we have to go back to the underlying principle. The reason one is not allowed to eat before davening is because it's considered to be gaiva. But if there's a different reason why I'm eating, nothing to do with gaiva, it's not because I need to sit down and have my gourmet breakfast before I leave the house. No, the reason why I'm sitting down is because I'm weak, because I'm fragile, because I don't feel well, and by having something to eat or to drink, it will rejuvenate me, it will give me the opportunity to daven like a mensch. Then, says the Rambam, in some way you're considered like a cholet, in some way you're considered like somebody who's sick, and therefore we would assume that you would be allowed to eat or drink before davening. And the same, they write, goes for water. Even if I'm not sick, but a person drinks water to clear their throat, to clear their mouth, to clear their head, that is something that is permissible. Okay, so the Torah writes about water. Now let's take it a step further, where we have the Pri-Chadash. Pri-Chadash is in the 1600s. So the Beis Yosef is the 1500s. Pri-Chadash is a commentary on the side of the Torah. Pri-Chadash in the 1600s comes along and he says, well, if you're going to have water before the davening, that's okay. But now we have this idea that people drink coffee. Right? So Pri-Chadash, coffee is okay, because coffee ostensibly is water. It's the same thing. Just put a little flavor in there. However, he says, don't dare put sugar in there. Putting sugar in there would be gaifa. For a person to drink water is okay. Person to drink hot water is okay. Person to drink hot water with some flavor is also okay. But to drink hot water with sugar, that's something that is untenable, that is something we cannot accept. And writes the Pri-Chadash, to drink sugar with your coffee is something that is totally unacceptable. That would be a gaifa. Okay. Now we know that it's become standard practice that everybody drinks coffee and they put sugar into it as well. So the Acharonim reconsider again. And the Acharonim say, well, now it's no longer a gaiva to put sugar into your coffee. After all, everybody drinks coffee with sugar in the morning, so it's not a big deal. It's not like you're making something so fancy. So therefore the Acharonim say, well, because it became standard that everybody puts sugar in the coffee and milk in the coffee, that would be something that we don't have to worry about at all, and it's something that we no longer have concern. So the Maharsham lived in the 1900s, late 1800s, and the Maharsham writes, well, everybody puts milk in the coffee as well, not just sugar, and therefore he says, we extended and continue to extend it. So it started off that the Torah writes, drinking water before davening is fine. Then it became drinking hot water before davening is fine. Then drinking hot water with coffee in it is fine. Then drinking hot water with coffee and sugar is fine. Then the Maharsham in the 1800s says, hot water with the coffee, with the sugar and the milk, it's all fine. Why? Because that's considered to be standard. Now you come to our generation today, and you have the people who walk into shul, I always love it. They walk in like there's nothing else going on, with the cup of coffee, mila davening, the drinking from it. I never understood that, like, you know, drink your coffee. If you're going to have the coffee, drink it before davening. But okay, they walk into shul. What? Shabbos after Shabbos, different story. But okay, over here, so they walk into shul and they have not just the coffee. It's the... I'm not a coffee drinker. Never tasted a coffee in my life. But I hear a lot of people talking about coffee around me. I'm always amazed when you go into the bagel store and somebody in front of you orders a coffee with like 10 different nuances of how they want it made. This kind of milk and that kind of sugar and this kind of thing. I'm like, well, it's just a coffee. Take it easy. All right, but I guess people get very carried away with their coffee. Yeah? Yeah, so brushing your teeth before you're davening, we assume is fine. Because that's something that's really just freshening a person up that they should be able to daven properly. It's not really taking care of your own needs. I mean, it is, of course. I like to brush my teeth. But I'm doing it because I want to feel like a mensch. If I show up to shul without brushing my teeth, nobody wants to daven with me. And I also don't feel so comfortable. But outside of that, I think about it. So now you have a cappuccino. And you have the milk that you froth. And you have the double espresso. I'm trying to think of all the different nuschos of how you come up with this, and the frappe and the mocha and everything. Is that really what the Torah had in mind? Hard for me to imagine. When the Torah says that it's not considered gaiva to drink before davening, he said water. Then we extended the water to be water that's hot. Then we extended that further to be water that's hot with a little bit of flavor, which is coffee. Then we said, okay, coffee is like bitter, I guess, if you don't have any flavor in there outside of the coffee, so we're going to put sugar in also. Okay, then the Maharsham said, we're going to put some milk. Now we're going to put the heated milk with the espresso, with the flavors, with the mocha, with the whipped cream on top, with the everything, and you're going to show up to shul with it, with your four buttons open and your sleeves rolled up, walking around with your coffee cup. I mean, come on! Really, that's not what the Ribbono Shel Olam had in mind. It can't be. So I think about it often that that's probably not really right. Now, the Shulchan Aruch does say, if somebody needs the tzarech refuah to eat or drink before davening, of course you're allowed to do that. That's a tzarech. That's something that's needed. That's obviously not doing it miderech gaiva either. Let's look at the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan writes over here in Siman Pei Tes. Yesha asru lishtos im tzukar. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, there are some who said, you're not allowed to drink coffee with sugar. Ve'en yodei hatam, writes the Aruch HaShulchan, I don't know what the problem is. Da'atu shem achila yesh bazeh, v'harei ina ela lahatim. It's not called eating sugar. If you're allowed to drink water, you're allowed to drink water with sugar. What's the problem? He says, some say the only time that you're allowed to have sugar is if you keep the sugar in your mouth. You know, they used to have the sugar cubes. People used to keep it in their mouth. He says, the Aruch HaShulchan, at least you're making a way that you're showing that you're not just having a full-blown breakfast before you go to shul. Ve'eno iker, avalim chalav nirali de'aser, de'chalav masbiya, writes the Aruch HaShulchan, okay, I'm willing to take on my shoulders sugar, but I'm not willing to say that milk is allowed. No way, you're not allowed to have milk in your coffee. Ve'o de'ba midam de'dam ner'cha v'nasa chalav, he says, and physiologically he says, how is milk created? So he says, you have blood in the body, and ultimately the blood contributes to the milk creation. That's what he writes. And he says, therefore, that's back to the pasuk, kodem shedispalo adimchem, okay, he says, the truth is, I was outvoted. If it were up to me, I would say, you're not allowed to have milk in the coffee. But he says, it seems that everyone's mekel, and therefore, we don't have to worry. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach follows that, and he says, well, in our generation, we know that everyone drinks coffee together with sugar and together with milk, and there's nothing to be worried about at all. But I think, Reb Shlomo Zalman, if he saw today the kinds of coffees that we have, there's no doubt, I mean, I don't know, it's hard to say, but there's no doubt in my mind that any contemporary person who saw the fancy coffees that we have here in our neighborhood would say, you cannot drink that before davening. That is really not something that is just being done to wake yourself up. That is not just being done to clear your head and clear your throat. That's being done to pamper yourself, which is exactly what the Gemara says is not supposed to be done. Yeah?
First of all, couldn't you, those fancy coffees presumably are not made in the house, they're made in a store. So wouldn't that in itself be problematic to go to a store to bring?
Okay.
And then also,
people have pretty fancy coffee machines in their house, no?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
The reading in the Gemara and Brachos is that it goes from achila, and then is it possible to argue that shtia, which is what the first world is, definitely a less problematic than
yeah.
Discussing achila. The pasuk says achila, and then there's another statement where Rabbi Chanina says.
Right. So the poskim seem to say the way the Torah explains it is that it's two reasons in the Gemara. The first one is about achila, and the second one is achila and shtia, both of them. So it seems the gaiva part is about achila and shtia. And that's where this whole discussion comes in. That's where the whole conversation comes in about the gaiva, what is considered gaiva and what perhaps is not. And Rav Asher Weiss told me during COVID, there was an interesting shaila. I forgot where the shaila came up, but he said somewhere in America, they asked him a question that there were schools that were running, but the schools were told by the government that they weren't allowed to serve any meals, because they were concerned about the transmission of COVID and serving meals and whatever it is, but they allowed them to run the schools. I don't know. The government really thought the kids are going to be wearing masks all day and not transmit that way. I don't know. Whatever. So they allowed them to run the school, but no meals. So the question then became, you have these kids who are in school, and every day the general protocol is, you daven in school, then they had breakfast, right? I think it was 7th or 8th grade, middle school, so they daven together as a minyan, and then they eat breakfast afterward, and then they go to the first period of the Gemara, the Chumash, whatever it is that they're learning. So the question became, now that the government is not allowing them to have breakfast in the school, so the question became, what are they supposed to do? If they're going to tell all the kids to eat at home before davening, then they're being mechanic the kids to eat before davening. If they're going to tell all the kids, no, you're not allowed to eat before davening, and therefore everyone has to daven at home before they come to school, how many kids are actually going to daven at home? Half the kids are not going to daven at all. Even if the kids who do daven are not going to daven as seriously as they would in school, because they're not davening with their class, they're not davening with their teachers, they're going to float in and out of shul, in and out of a minyan, they're not going to daven with the seriousness that they're supposed to. So that was a very interesting question. What would we tell the kids? Would we say, it's better for you to daven at home, and therefore we would risk half of the kids not davening, and even the kids who are davening, maybe they won't daven as seriously, as long as they don't eat before the davening? Or would you say, no, in such a situation, it's better that they eat breakfast at home, let them take care of it, and then they'll come to school and they'll eat, and they'll daven together as a class. So I remember at the time, Rav Asher went through the whole sugya, and at the time he told me that you have to know the following yesod. And this is something that I find often as a recurrent theme when we discuss shailas together, that he has a very broad perspective. And sometimes he says you have to zoom out the lens and not just look at what's in front of you, you have to look at the bigger picture. So he says, ask yourself the following question. And again, I think it's a little bit of a dangerous territory to be in if you're not a major Adam Gadol who knows how to look at the bigger picture. Because when you start zooming out and looking at the bigger picture, you'll say, well, people are really uncomfortable with Shabbos and not using their phones on Shabbos, so let's look at the bigger picture. If we can keep them in the Jewish community, but we'll just cut some corners about Shabbos, so okay. So you have to know where you're allowed to draw the line and where you can't, and what's considered part of the bigger picture and what's not. Very interesting discussion. But he said in this situation, he felt the following. What was the whole reason why Chazal said you're not allowed to eat before davening? Because of gaiva. But what was really the impetus for the takana not to eat before davening? The real reason was because we want you to take davening seriously. You're going to go out to a coffee shop before davening together with all your friends, and then at an afterthought, you're going to go daven. You're not going to take davening as seriously as you should. So he said, the whole impetus for the reason not to eat before davening is because we want to make sure that people take davening seriously. So now you're going to say that because you're not allowed to eat before davening, kids aren't going to daven at all. Zoom out the lens for a minute. Look back. What was the reason for the Takanas Chazal? And ask yourself, does that plug into this situation? If the situation that we're faced with now is one where by saying you're not allowed to eat before davening, the kids are going to ultimately not daven at all. Does that make sense? Is that what Chazal had in mind? It can't be. You have to ask yourself the question in the larger perspective, and you can't just zero in on the halacha itself. You have to look whether or not it actually makes sense. Is it possible that this is what Chazal had in mind when they said, you're not allowed to eat before davening? Once again, it's a very dangerous kind of argument to make, because I can make that argument about a million different things. But I remember I once had a discussion with him, and then when we had this, I had a discussion with him many years ago, that I had once seen Rabbi Yosef Engel quotes from a Hagos Maimini. I think it's one of the Rishonim. I think the Hagos Maimini quotes are from one of the Rishonim. I don't remember who. So he writes that if you live on a desert island and there's just a young man and a young woman who both live there, everybody else left. And now the two of them are alone and they want to get married. Why not? Let's get married. Why be alone? Why not marry each other? So they want to get married. But the problem is there's no minion here to make a Sheva Brachas. And in order to make a Sheva Brachas, you need to have a minion. So the Hagos Maimini writes, you're not allowed to get married if you know that you're not going to have a minion for the Sheva Brachas. So what does that mean? So I should be Mevatel Peruvu my whole life? I should not get married the mitzvah of Chuppah V'Kiddushin I shouldn't do because I don't have a minion? It sounds unreasonable. But that's what the Hagos Maimini writes. And Rabbi Yosef Engel has this in the context of a discussion whether Brachas Ma'akvos Zeu Azu or not. Do we assume that a bracha is so important that if you can't make a bracha, therefore you can't do the mitzvah? Say, for example, somebody's in the hospital and they're soiled and they're unable to make brachas. So would we say as a result of that they shouldn't do anything? Or do you say, okay, can't make the bracha, so do something else without making a bracha? That's the question that he's generally discussing, and he brings in this case. I remember I told it to Rav Asher Weiss. He said he had never seen the Hagos Maimini. He said, I can't believe it. It doesn't make sense. It can't be. It just doesn't make any sense. So he said, look at the bigger picture. Is that what the Ribono Shel Olam wants? You should never get married, never have children, never be Mekayim the Mitzvah Peruvu, never do Chuppah V'Kiddushin because you don't have a minion? Does that make sense? What's the whole reason for the minion? Because we want to be Mesameach, Chasam, Mekal, we want to give them a bracha, kalabur, whatever. So because of that, you're going to say, be Mevatel, everything? Doesn't make sense to say such a thing. Now, I agree it doesn't make sense, but you need to be a very big person to say when it makes sense and when it doesn't. So he argues it as well. We know that there's an Isser to learn Torah before you say Birchas HaTorah, right? So you have to first say Birchas HaTorah, only then are you allowed to learn. So a very famous discussion in Eretz Yisrael, many of the contemporary poskim talk about it, what happens when I have a chiloni taxi driver. So I have 10 minutes in the car with the taxi driver. He's listening to the radio. Instead, I can strike up a conversation with him, and in the middle of a conversation, I'll tell him a nice Dvar Torah on Chumash, nice Dvar Torah on the Parsha. So, maybe you'll say, I'm not allowed to do that. Why? Because he didn't say Birchas HaTorah. So what are you going to say? Because he didn't say Birchas HaTorah, therefore he should never learn a word of Torah in his life? If I know he's not going to say Birchas HaTorah, and I know with certainty that he didn't say Birchas HaTorah, you're going to tell me I should hold myself back from talking Divrei Torah. Instead, I should speak Lashon Hara with him. Instead, I should listen to the radio with him. Does that make sense? How can that be? So his argument was, although it's true that there's an Isser to learn without Birchas HaTorah, but if you have an option of either not learning at all because he didn't say Birchas HaTorah, or learning something without a bracha, would you say that option B is better? So, once again, I go back to the original comment, and that is, it's a very slippery slope. It's a very dangerous road to go down. But I think in this case, it's a very interesting shaila to consider. When you have the option of the boys in yeshiva who can either eat before the davening, or or come to school and then eat later, or come to school and then take care of it later, is that something that we would encourage? Is that something we would allow? Or perhaps not? Yeah, you have a question. So if you look in the Gemara seems to say both. The Gemara in the second sin says Ol Machal Shamayim, but in the beginning it talks about Tefillah. And from here, the Tur writes, and the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch seem to say, the Gemara seems to be encompassing all. Gemara seems to say that we're talking about Kriya Shema and Tefillah. However, the Ramah does say Akula. The Ramah says, maybe picking up on your diuk, the Ramah does say in Siman Pei Tes, that perhaps we should say that if a person davens at least some of the Tefillah before, then maybe they can eat before they daven. And that is why in many girls' schools they teach us to the women. Even if you're not going to have an opportunity to daven the entire davening because you're busy, maybe it makes sense that a woman should say some kind of tefillah in the morning. Where does that come from? What do you mean? You didn't really daven. Just davened a little bit. What does that help? The answer is the Ramah says that it does help. For a person to daven even minimally before, and the Ramah throws in, maybe should say Kriya Shema first because of that diuk in the Gemara. Maybe should say Kriya Shema first. Maybe should say Brachas first. That would be enough to allow a person to be able to eat once they've done that, because it's already considered as if they took care of business a little bit with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they are Mekabel HaMalchus Shamayim, and that perhaps would be sufficient. Another time where we find this is, we know that before observing many mitzvahs, the Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to be engaged in eating or in other things. It's actually a discussion on any given day. Let's say, for example, a person, I remember we always had this discussion, most of the yeshivas daven ma'ariv at 10 o'clock, right? They don't daven ma'ariv they don't change the ma'ariv every night based on the zman. They daven mincha at 2:30, mincha 3 o'clock, whatever, they daven ma'ariv at 10 o'clock at night. So what do they have? They have dinner at 6, then they have night seder at 7:30, and then they're going to have ma'ariv at 9:30, 10 o'clock. So how are you allowed to eat dinner? So you'll say, I'm eating dinner when it's still light outside, so the zman ma'ariv didn't even come in yet. What about in the winter time when the shkia is at 4:30, shkia is at 5 o'clock? What? So the discussion in the Achronim is, if you have a Zman Kavua, when I know that I daven Ma'ariv at 10 o'clock every single night, I'm at night seder every single night, do I have to be worried about not eating before davening when I know with certainty that I'm going to daven later on? I'm not going to get carried away with my dinner. First of all, what's the yeshiva serving for dinner already? You're not going to get carried away regardless. But even if you would, the yeshiva is having a big siyum that night. Everybody knows we're all together, we're going to learn night seder, then we're going to go daven Ma'ariv perhaps. When you have a Minyan Kavua, that is not something you have to be worried about. That is a kula that the Achronim say. My father personally was always machmir not to rely on it. He never relied on it, and he always, always made sure to daven before eating, even when it meant that he was going to have to daven biyachidus. My father felt, when you're weighing out the different priorities, my father felt that even davening biyachidus would be better. So say, for example, it happened very often that my father would come home from yeshiva, and let's say they didn't have a minyan for Ma'ariv when Seder was over at 6:30. He was giving a shiur at 7:30, so he had 45 minutes at home before he had to run out to give a shiur. So he asked to eat dinner, but he didn't want to eat dinner because he didn't daven Ma'ariv, but there's no minyan for Ma'ariv at that time. So he would daven Ma'ariv at home, be yechidus. Then we would all eat dinner together, and then he would run out to his shiur. So that was something that I think is a very interesting ma'aseh rav. And when I asked him about it, he said that to be mekel, like the Achronim say, is a legitimate heter. The Achronim do say such a thing. But he felt that more proper, if he were to be asked, he said, for his own hanhaga, he felt that more proper would be that a person should take care of the davening first, even when you have a minyan kavua, even when you daven at the same time, he still felt that he shouldn't do it. So they always had a minyan after his shir. It was always a 9:30 ma'ariv after the shir was over, but he felt that for himself, it was always better for him not to rely upon that, and to daven before eating, even when he knew that he was going to have a minyan later. And the similar idea that the Shulchan Aruch writes is that a person is not allowed to engage in serious Talmud Torah before performing the mitzvah of tefillah either. So you'll say, what do you mean? Every shul has a Daf Yomi shir. So how are we allowed to do that? Daf Yomi doesn't always meet after Shacharis. Very often Daf Yomi meets before Shacharis. And many shuls have a minyan where they have a shir before the davening. So that's not proper. So I'm a little bit uncomfortable with the shuls, including our annex shul that we just started, where they make an announcement on the paper when it gives the zmanim for the shul. It says, coffee with the rabbi at 9, shachar starts at 9:10. Even if we're mekel that you're allowed to have a coffee before davening, I think it's a little strange to advertise that. So you're saying, come, chill out with the rabbi and schmooze and 9 o'clock is coffee, really nice. And then we're going to daven at 9:10. So, I don't know, to me it's just doesn't sound right. But But let's say we have a shir before the davening, not just shmooze with the rabbi with coffee, but we're actually having a shir before the davening. So there the Mishnah Berurah says, if we have a set minyan, like you very correctly said, that would not be a problem. And similarly, the Mishnah Berurah says, even if I don't have a set minyan, let's say sometimes I daven this time, sometimes I daven that time, if I have a friend who's going to remind me that I should daven. So for example, you have a person, someone's married, and their spouse is going to remind them, hey, you know, you didn't daven Shacharis yet. So you're in the middle of doing something else, you're in the middle of learning the daf, you're sitting at home watching, Eli Stefanski or whoever it is who's giving his daf and doing all those things. So it's not a problem. Why? Because someone in your house is going to remind you that you should make sure to go to daven, and that would not be a problem either. And the same, the Shulchan Aruch writes that if you have a tzibur that is learning together, you don't have to be worried that the entire tzibur is going to forget about the davening. That's not going to happen. An entire daf yom yishir is going to forget that we have to daven Shacharis. That's very unlikely, very unusual. That really doesn't happen too often. And that is something that the Shulchan Aruch says we have a right to be mekel. However, the Mishnah Berurah does say, in Sifkat and Lamed Hei, if you look it up, Mishnah Berurah does say that perhaps to recite, if you're going to have a shir, and thereby you're going to miss the Zman Kriya Shema, says the Mishnah Berurah, you should say Kriya Shema before the shir. You shouldn't allow the entire tzibur to miss Zman Kriya Shema. You should make sure to make a reminder, which is obvious. The Mishnah Berurah didn't have to say that. It's obvious you have to say Kriya Shema within the Zman, and you can't let the shir push off the Kriya Shema and make you miss the Zman. So that is the addition of the Mishnah Berurah. Yeah.
Does an alarm work?
So that is a very interesting question. I think...